Okay, if I could take a general kind of sense, how many people feel like they might have a question or comment at this time? Yeah? Great. Okay. Translation at the back. Yes, it's a good idea. Yeah. Do we have a translator at the back? You can go. That'd be great. Thanks. So yeah, so Zohar will be answering in Hebrew, and some of the questions will be in Hebrew. So yeah, I think. Okay, great. You on? No. I'm just going to check your mic.
Okay. So I need to talk. אז אני עושה רק בדיקת סאונד. בלי לאכול את המיקרופון. אז איך זה נשמע מאחורה? ככה? אוקיי, יופי. אוקיי. אז בואו נראה אם יש שאלות. כן.
So when we're using the practice to send some metta through the breath to an area of painfulness, what's the recipient of that pain? Is it the sensations or the, was it the pain itself you said, or the
area of the body?
Sure. Yeah. What were the options you gave? You said the sensation, the area. Right. Right. Yeah. Beautiful. Okay. Do you want to say anything?
I don't know if you want to respond in English since the question was in English.
That's a good idea. Thanks. Yeah, so I'll respond in English. And, you know, let us know, as usual, if anything I say, you know, you need a translation for some word or whatever. It may not matter exactly who the recipient is. It's much more significant that there's a change in the relationship. Yeah. Which is there's kind of a change in the relationship towards the sensations or towards the area, you know. You could, usually we might even want to say, try both, yeah, and see, does what, and we might figure out, actually, you know, it was actually not enough kindness towards the knee, in this case, you know, that's kind of the recipient of painful sensations, and it might actually be more impactful for us to meet the sensations themselves. So I think both could work, but probably the main thing is that we've switched the relationship from I don't want you and I need to find a way of getting rid of this, pushing away, exactly, to, oh, this is what's here, you know, and we're trying a different way of relating to it. Thank you. Do you want to repeat the question, should I?
I can repeat it. Do you want
Great.
Me to repeat it? I don't
You
mind.
Can repeat and answer.
Okay, so the question was about the relationship between... why am I doing it now? I'm doing it in English because it was in English. So the relationship between spirituality and sexuality and kind of at least two ways. One is that actually feeling into the pleasantness of the breath can feel sometimes orgasmic even, like can feel very sensually pleasurable. And then there was also a question about our own experience if around that relationship. Okay. So I'm just kind of wondering about the kind of what's useful in the context of the retreat right
mm-hmm.
now,
mm-hmm.
which is more the first one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So maybe we'll respond to the first aspect of the question and then the second aspect maybe in a one-to-one or towards the end of the retreat. It's an interesting question, and I think one thing that we start to discover, for some of us this may be relevant, for some of us it may not be relevant at this time, may come up sometimes, is the kind of the range of sense experience, yeah, like use the word sensuality, I think, which is a good word to use here. And so when we work with something like the breath or like the walking and we contact a sense of well-being, yeah, or pleasantness in that experience, yeah, in that experience. And sometimes we can open to a degree of well-being or pleasantness that can have similarities, but also is actually not, maybe the main difference is not conditioned by an object in the same way. Yeah, yeah. This is a kind of, sometimes can be an interesting way of discerning. Yeah. So we can say, you know, we're breathing in a way, yeah, we're like what we were doing just now, we might be exploring, how can I breathe in a way that feels pleasant or that brings well-being? And I'm using different words because the language can matter, yeah, for us. And for different people, different language will be appropriate, yeah. And so then we're kind of opening to that. And in the instructions now, it was even like, can I breathe in a way that feels kind of has more well-being or can feel more pleasant, yeah? But the kind of aspects of the pleasantness are kind of spaciousness, yeah? That's kind of can be one of them, yeah? So that can be one way. Sometimes as we're doing the practice and there's this harmonization that we've been talking about, the body, heart, and mind come together, there can be feelings of pleasure that come up from the meditation practice, and they can be really intense, yeah? So this is kind of, I'm just kind of opening that out, yeah? And sometimes, I'm just naming that, they can feel, you know, really on the range of orgasmic, that some people may be familiar with this, some people may not. They can feel very, very pleasure, like intense pleasure. Important discernment is that sense of the object, yeah? Yeah, so the object of that, there isn't an object with which this comes, yeah? It's coming from the experience and how we're paying attention, yeah? And again, this can be a very particular avenue for some people. If this is happening, really a good thing to bring to one-to-ones with us around how to work with it, yeah? How to work with it. But kind of what we're interested with all of this is the sense of kind of we're deepening understanding of how our experience is fabricated, yeah? And we're also using our capacity, as Nathan was saying, to bring attention to something in particular, yeah? And then to stay with it in ways that increase a sense of well-being, which, yeah, also can increase a degree of pleasure. Does that respond to your question? It's a big topic.
But I just want... It's a whole retreat.
Yeah. Definitely. It's a big subject, and it's kind of a particular avenue also of practice, you know, that kind of goes in this direction. But it's good to bring up and to kind of start to kind of explore that, especially when we use words like pleasantness. You know, sometimes we can say it's not the... like we're opening to beauty, we're opening to the pleasant and experience, but that sense of like not so much focusing on the object but on the way of relating that opens that up. Yeah. And then allowing ourselves to enjoy in a way that's spacious. Yeah. Really interesting that. Yeah. Yeah. Don't know if you want to add anything.
That's good. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Matwad, Ken.
Having a lot of social kind of like
I was feeling like the tension between meditation and my life, and also knowing that it's possible that my life is kind of out of balance. But also, I just kind of want to ask maybe how to, like, I'm noticing that I'm also feeling like the benefits of being here, but also sometimes my heart is like, no, but in the end you're going to go home and then everything's going to be back. And I just, so maybe like how to cultivate like a quality that can kind of, you know, goes into the social life. Because when I leave meditation retreats, a lot of times I just want to like go to the meditation.
Great. So I'll give a summary version of what you said. So interested in this idea around speaking and listening, which we mentioned in regards to the group meetings that we'll have, as a time where we can actually see that as also a meditation. And this kind of framed in your mind is like, you know, this feeling that a meditation retreat is in some way like an escape from the world, you know, and it's like it has its own thing and we're doing that, but actually wanting also to see the version of meditation which is like, oh, it also comes back into the world, and maybe I could say is like not just that we came here and we were resourced and rested and rejuvenated in that way, but actually we've learned skills of how to interact and operate on that kind of social level, yeah, in the world. So does that feel okay as a framing of the question? Yeah. So yeah, really, really great question, and I think that probably at certain times we want to view meditation in one or other of those modes, which is like such a relief, you know. And sometimes in the Dharma, we mentioned this together, it's like it's talked about as an escape. Yeah, it's like an escape from the things of the world, the pressures of the world, the conditions of the world. And we actually, like sleep is like an escape and a rejuvenation and this kind of thing. So it's good to kind of view it that way. It's like, I'm going to have my meditation. It's this, you know, it's the no me time. Not just me time, which we say in English, you know. It's like, not even me there. You know, what a relief. And then at other times, it's like, okay, what is meditation? It's really, really deep listening to ourselves, yeah? It's really, you know, creative, cultivating, and I'm giving to myself the very things that I ask from others to give me. You know, and I can actually see it's, that's what I'm cultivating. But if I've cultivated it here towards this me, I could convert it towards that me that feels themselves to be a me. I can hold them, listen to them, be sensitive to them, and actually give them what they really want. You know, we kind of joked about what do people really want? What people really want is to be seen, to be heard, to be listened, to be held, yeah, to be respected, those kinds of things. So we see, is like, is it possible to do that, to move into the world, to bring these skills as a way of operating in the world, you know? And then that might change what we do on retreats, yeah? A little bit, but it may also not. So there's these two kind of models that I can see, and I'm quite interested in the one that has transferable skills, sees meditation as transferable skills, into communication, into interaction, in all its forms, because as I think is kind of sitting in your question and also in your livelihood, is that there are radical changes we need to make as a society to survive and also to thrive. And, you know, we want to utilize everything that we have with this body, heart, mind, and period of time that we have and possibilities to support that. And so, yeah, I think these listening groups will actually see actually a really helpful thing. If we took one skill from this retreat and it was, I've learned how to listen to someone better. Yeah, and you know, hold that space. I think that'd be a nice skill to have.
Yeah, and we will also be speaking more about the transferability of things that we're doing here. Yeah. Ken.
I know it's a way of attachment, but
Yeah, wonderful. So I'll repeat the question. Sometimes when practicing metta towards someone that's close, someone that we really care about, the intensity, of wishing them, say happiness, and that's my example, not yours, it becomes so intense that the line between dukkha and metta blurs, in one's own experience. There's definitely a sense of open-heartedness, but there's a sense, and you called it, attachment of kind of then contracting around that, wanting that to happen. Yeah, so beautiful question. It's interesting. I was just thinking about a question that was asked yesterday, last night, and I think a few more things to maybe clarify around metta practice. One, I'll say something kind of more, we can say, practical, technical about the way of practicing. Sometimes it may be helpful to choose, someone for whom there's a sense of that well-wishing, but we're less invested. Yeah. So sometimes, like with metta practice, and we will be speaking more about it, it's like the finding what most supports the quality that we are cultivating. Yeah. So in this case, if we're working with beings, and that's, I think I mentioned it yesterday, sometimes for some of us, it's easier to work with someone that we care less about, but we care enough. Yeah. Or that just opens the heart. Yeah. So that can be one skillful way of just working with that. The other, I'm still going to address the very important question of how do we cultivate metta when we're invested. And so we can use some of the things that we used in this meditation also, and some of the things from Nathan's talk yesterday. We can notice that when there's attachment, when there's dukkha, the space will be smaller. So the heart might still feel open in connection with another, but the general sense of space will feel smaller. And I really want you to be happy, and right now I know that you're going through a difficult period, and you're laughing because you see what I'm doing with my body, and you recognize it. We have this movement, so we start to recognize it, and we say, okay, what if I still stay with that really deep wish for someone's happiness, and hopefully you're still looking at my body now as I'm relaxing it, and opening the space. So some of it might be visible, some of it I might only be feeling myself, but relax the space of the body, and open the space of the body. This is really significant. And with metta, also remembering we're sowing seeds. We didn't use this analogy yet. It's a practice of intention. That means we're sowing seeds, but we also acknowledge that life is not in our soul control. So we may, and we know that in our close relationships, we may give all the support, we may do everything we can, and yet people have to go through what they're going through dependent on a variety of conditions. We can't stop someone from getting sick. Can't stop someone from getting their heart broken. At the end of a relationship. There's many things. It's not just in our control. So we have that sense of well-wishing. We have that sense of wanting well for them, but we kind of let go of the sense of control. And so this may be possible with people we really care about, and sometimes maybe we work first in places where it's easier to hold that with equanimity, sister quality of metta. And we build up that capacity there. And maybe the last thing, I'm aware I'm speaking for a long time, isn't it? The last thing to say is sometimes we just bring our attention from the person. We still hold the person in attention. We still hold our intention in attention. And we bring it more to the feeling of the metta, the wishing well, than to that actually having an impact. So we're practicing metta primarily not to kind of have some magic power to change someone's conditions. It's not that that can't happen, but that's not the primary focus. It's in order to work with our own way of relating, the own kind of our own experience, and through that we change the world. And if we're just in the realm of the relationship, it makes us more available to support the other person in the way they most need to be supported, if we're less invested. We know that intellectually. Yeah? So we kind of come back, cultivation of intention, the sowing the seeds. We bring back the strong metta there, strong well-wishing there for someone else, and we bring it back here rather than being pulled into how is that going to impact the other person. Does that respond to your question? Yeah? And I just want to relate it to the question last night with around the, are we wishing something for somebody in the present or in the future? Because often the phrases sound like we're wishing for something in the future. We're wishing for something where, first of all, again, the sense of like the cultivation is in here. So this is what matters, the kind of the wishing well, the relationship that wishes well for others. That's the primary thing. And then giving yourself permission to play with that sense of, you know, present future in the way that is helpful for you. But interestingly, the language, as far I might be, my Hebrew may have gotten so bad that I'm missing this, but as far as I know, you know, especially with the chant, שכל היצורים והיצורות ידעו חופש מדיכוי. So that can be in this moment, right? ברגע הזה שכל היצורים והיצורות ידעו חופש מדיכוי, and it can also be in the future. So we can play with the language also to kind of dissolve that present-future separation. Yeah. Kind of the connection is really that, yeah, working with this heart and mind primarily as a vehicle for well-being in the world. Yeah, but does that, yeah, hopefully that responds to the questions. Yeah. Sorry, that was a long one. We had more questions, I think, in the hall, unless you have something important to add to that one.
I'm not going to add that. I think we should just take one more question. Is there anyone who hasn't spoken before? Yes, please. Yeah. Great. So the question relates again to metta, and looking at this quality, you know, that we're often kind of guiding it towards a being or a thing or a, you know, all of these things that we normally have relationships with, and then this kind of impacts. There's like an after effect on the thinking that this relationship or this being is kind of coming with us, and that's creating more thinking and, you know, doesn't feel so supportive for the retreat. So it's kind of like a few interesting areas within this inquiry, which is one, like what's our relationship with thinking is a whole interesting area. How, when thinking's a problem, when thinking's not a problem, the thought that thinking is a problem, is that the real problem or is actually thinking the problem? And, you know, like we could talk about that for a long time and confuse each other a lot. The other point is, like, literally, what are we doing? So as far as I can tell, metta is a way of relating, which kind of involves a sense of me relating to something else. So we started off the questions around, like, a knee pain. So we can have one way of relating to knee pain, which usually isn't that good, like either it's worry and concern, or it's, I don't want to feel that, or, you know, something like this. And then we're changing that one to metta. So it might be more helpful for us to practice like that, because maybe it wouldn't disturb us so much if afterwards we were, as you know, would we be thinking about sensations? Maybe not. Maybe it's too subtle. Like, it doesn't feel like a thing. So you can practice sending metta to the sensations that we experience. You know, and you could just have it as a So I don't know if we've covered this already, but like what we're doing here is kind of bringing a being to mind and then sending metta is like a construct that people developed as a way of practicing metta, right? But metta itself is an inherent quality in all beings, right? We have friendships, we have goodwill to some, and we just want to see if we can expand that to everyone. What would be the best way for you to do that is kind of an alive question for you, and why all metta practices are a little bit different. But the kind of final point then would be, one of the descriptions of metta is just radiate metta to the north, to the east, to the west, to the south. And so you could kind of practice that way, you know, either as the kind of the final part of the practice or just as you're doing the walking or anything like that. So feel encouraged, feel invited to find what feels like a supportive solution to that. But like the key ones that I like to play with is any sensation, physical, audio, you know, visual, they're all sensations, they're all sense appearances. They can be met in metta, right down to the vibrational level, and then it wouldn't necessarily become things we think about. And the other could be like just radiating it out in a direction. Those are the two things that kind of come to mind.
Yeah. And I would just add to that, yeah, just like with the radiating practice, which we haven't mentioned yet, so thank you for asking that question, is if you can tune into the quality of metta, yeah, and then spread it through the body and then radiate it out, yeah. That's kind of how that practice works, which is how it's described in the suttas. That's the instruction the Buddha gave. Yeah, is, you know, tune into metta, then fill up the body space, then radiate it in the different directions, as Nathan said. So for some people, that's a much more accessible and useful practice than the beings and the sentences. And also, you know, as Nathan was saying, like that invitation. So now we know, oh, the Buddha said this, and then human beings developed that. It gives us also some permission to be creative. You know, what kind of supports metta in us, and then what supports that deepening of it and the spreading of it in whatever way is useful. Does that respond to your question? Yeah, there's a lot there. Yeah, there's a lot there to explore. But if you want to just keep it simple, I would say do one of the two things that Nathan suggested, either just a sense of metta to body sensations, sounds, you know, visual if you're walking, you know, that through the sense organs with clarity maybe of which sense you're working with, or just the sense of the radiating, the feeling that the metta internally, that quality, that intention, and then just letting it spread out into the world, just like the breath spreads out, yeah, and see what that feels like.
Yeah. And maybe just with respect to this, you know, you asked us a question, then we responded, and now you have more questions that, yeah, they're a bit like a virus sometimes, and they just keep growing and growing. But they can be really helpful, like questions. There's a word, there's quest in a question. Maybe this is a journey that we're going on, and these questions actually lead us forwards. And so, yeah, we haven't responded to everybody's questions or reflections here, but maybe those questions have come up for you. They're for you to explore, to investigate. It's like, what should I do? And it's like, well, what's an experience, an object and an atmosphere? Okay, so what should I do? You know, we have a sense of how experience is constructed. Maybe we can have a sense of like how to respond to our questions. Not necessarily getting rid of the question, but actually letting the question guide us on this quest.
Yeah, and if there's anything left that's urgent, if you have a group today, bring it to the group. The groups will be up before lunch, or leave us a note. Yeah. So, thank you.